This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal!
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 Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Just the man you need. On this, the first day of Bill's minicamp, to tell you what happened, a man who, by his column today, I believe, I am certain, knows the difference between DeAndre Wesley and Adrian Waddle, two offensive linemen on the Bills, our own Sal Capaccio. Good afternoon, Sal. How is life?
What an intro.
That was the most amazing introduction I may have ever had. And I've been on a lot of podcasts and things like that where they really pump up the guest. Thank you very much. That was a good intro. And I did have to explain to somebody who DeAndre Wesley was or is, I should say.
You're going to have to do it right now, I think, for me, if you don't mind.
He was on the Bills practice squad last year. He was claimed by the team off waivers just about 3 weeks ago. I believe he's actually on the practice squad even 2 years ago. Like they're really familiar with him, this staff is. And they claimed him off waivers right before, it was about May 22nd, I think I looked it up. And, he's been with them pretty much all of OTAs.
And is he maybe good?
I'm not sure about that. He hasn't really played much in the NFL.
Okay.
He's somebody I think that they've always, if they're going to go out and get him, and he was on the practice squad last year, they claimed him, they probably see enough in him that they can work with him. But I thought it is, glad you brought him up. In this regard, Mike, he has strictly been pretty much a tackle in the time that I remember him in Buffalo, but now he started at and rotated at guard today with Vlad Dukas because of all the other injuries, because there are quite a bit of them.
Right, and I've got four offensive linemen here listed as not taking part at all, and then that doesn't even include guys that might have been limited or whatever. So maybe it's more a numbers thing than anything else, but it's kind of curious that his name pops up there on the first string offensive line.
Yeah, and he rotated with Vlad Dukas. I looked up, and Wesley was out there, and I know Dukas was out there. Wyatt Teller played a lot at right guard. Like, they didn't have many guys to rotate at all. In fact, I went down the roster after practice, and I believe Garrett McGinn was the only healthy lineman that I didn't really see rotate in with the first or second string. That's what they're doing. That's how bad it is right now as far as injuries and how many guys have to go in, because some guys like Ty Nsekhe, like, they're limited. So they're not going to do offense against defense. They're just maybe doing positional drills,
right,
you know, with their coaches and things like that. Russell Bodine, same example. So if I count them, the only healthy guy that I really believe would be Garrett McGinn that wasn't out there for any of the 11-on-11.
And I guess you don't want to be Garrett
first
McGinn.
First or second team.
Right.
I guess you don't want to be him then.
He might have been on the third team. I didn't really notice that. I didn't track that because there's so much rotation.
All right, we'll dig in a little harder tomorrow, Sal.
Okay, thanks, I will.
It's like Roy Hobbs. They wouldn't even let him take batting practice.
Right.
The Bodine thing might be the reason why you end up with this guy on the first team as a first team guard, because maybe Spencer Long is someone they'd like to have there, but they need him to play center with the second team because Bodine can't do the teamwork, right?
Totally right. Totally right. Today was the first day I saw Spencer Long at center. Now, he may have been there in other times when we weren't out there, but for the three OTAs that we were out there, I made a note to say I only saw Spencer Long at guard. I never saw him at center because they had, obviously, Mitch Morse is their starting center. He was out. Then they had Bodine there for a little bit. Well, he's been out. They had Feliciano.
Yeah.
And Jeremiah Searles actually was getting time. Now he's out, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, these guys, it's just been crazy how many guys have had to rotate in and out.
With Sal Capaccio on WGR, how about the bottom line on the line, if you will, Sal? At this stage, with all the new free agent acquisitions and Cody Ford in the second round, what should we expect overall? Like, are we at a point where, say, the Bills would expect to be strong up front? Is it really tough to predict how they'll be because of all the new people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to really expect to be a lot better than they were last year, Mike. You know, I don't know how you want to – strong is subjective, right? I mean, are they going to be a offensive line that's in the top half of the league? I would hope that they'd think and expect to be around there, I guess. I don't think anyone thinks they're going to be a top five or six unit, something like that. But not only did they sign a lot of guys, they signed a lot of guys with experience. You know, they're bringing in guys here who've played in this league, who've started in this league, who played in playoffs, who have Super Bowl rings. You know, guys who are well thought of around the NFL. And, you know, they made Mitch Morse the highest paid center in the NFL. And, you know, maybe if you want to do like a little comparison with the Jeff Skinner thing there, but that, you know, you're going to have to overpay a little bit once it gets to free agency for a guy if you really want him and you need him. And they did need someone like Mitch Morse. So, you know, here he is, $11 million a year. So, yeah, I think that they think they're going to be really much more improved up front. But, you know, it's hard to get a gauge on what they're doing right now because of all the shuffling. And that's more than any position in football. Those guys have to work together, be able to really find out what they can do. And then, you know, you do have to factor in what's going to happen with, A, the quarterback, and then, you know, the running backs behind him that obviously didn't have a very good year last year.
Yeah, you know, recognizing what you said about paying in free agency, like Morse being the highest paid center in the league obviously does not vault him to the top of the list as the top center in the league. It just means he had good timing, and he's a pretty good player. And, like, that sometimes that's how it works. But, you know, that's still an upgrade. And I'd say, I guess they're hoping, a pretty significant one. And Ford is thought to be a first-round talent by a lot of evaluators. It was a very popular pick with the draft Knicks. So, I mean, there's only five guys up there, and they've always been high on Dawkins. So, I don't know. Find a couple of guards that can play. And, you know, if everybody's right about Ford, maybe you can be, like, better than just middle of the league up there.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, look, John Feliciano is he's played in this league, and he's started in this league. And Spencer Long, the same thing. You know, if those are your two guards, Quentin Spain.
Spain, right, I was going to say.
He spent 4 years in Tennessee, you know, played. And then you have Ty Nsekhe, who I think can still win the right tackle job over Cody Ford. Now, he's not doing himself any favors by not being out there right now, but that's going to be a battle once you go to camp. And if one of those guys, whoever doesn't win it, either one of them can actually play guard if you wanted to try that. So, you know, they do have options, and obviously position flexibility is something that's very important, and you can put Jeremiah Searles at the top of that list. That guy plays every spot along the line, and that is why he has a job in this league, because he can do a lot of different things. But he's out right now, and he was a guy that played center last week. He played guard last year. He played tackle last year. He was brought in as an extra offensive lineman on the end. So position flexibility is very important, and I think we're going to see guys in different spots this year throughout training camp when maybe it looks like someone's taking hold of one job and you're like, all right, but that guy's pretty good. We got to find another spot for him, and then they move him to maybe a different position.
We're talking with Arsal Capaccio. He's on the West Her Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? First day of mandatory minicamp. Robert Foster was something that grabbed a lot of people's attention this morning. But then once you guys got out there, he was doing some work on the side, right?
Yeah, so this was like, I would say, the kind of the angst or emotion of the day when it went to Robert Foster. The first thing out of Sean McDermott's mouth was give the injury update, and he was the first guy he mentioned. So right away you're like, okay, Robert Foster's on the injury list. What happened here? He's been out there every single day. He said, Robert Foster, Zay Jones, you know, Jeremiah Searles, went through the list. And then when he was asked, he said he hurt his foot last week. We don't think it's anything that's going to be long-term, but he's still going through the evaluation process. Now, even that, sure, that sounds a little bit optimistic, but it's not a definite, right? You're not like, oh my gosh, what are they talking about here? What could happen? So you're still kind of wondering. So you go out to the practice field, and I'm looking around, and a lot of times you see the guys that are injured, and they're working with trainers, or they're off to the side, and I finally found Robert Foster, and he was off to the side with a trainer, and he was jogging up and down the field. Basically, what he was doing, he was doing the circumference of the field, and he was jogging the sidelines and walking the end zone, if that makes sense. So it looked to me like at least he was in the mode of, okay, I'm not too worried about it at this point, to be honest with you.
Okay, good. I mean, this is another chance to ask you, as we get a day closer, a little closer to the season, what it means when a player is injured at this point.
Well, Mike, I think more than anything, it just you know, those reps that could be valuable right now to kind of get the chemistry with Josh Allen, the timing, talk to him, what you're seeing when it comes to wide receiver, stuff like that, offensive line. working together as a five-man unit. I think those things. But look, if nobody did, the Jets elected not to have a rookie minicamp. If some team elected not to have any minicamp and they just showed up for training camp, sure, I think you'd be a little behind. But you have time at training camp to sort those things out. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. But I think what it means is you're just a little bit behind on where you might be with your chemistry and your communication and getting a few of the little kinks worked out that hopefully, you know, you can get worked out within the first few days of training camp
right.
Anyway.
And there's also time. I mean, the players are off. I heard John Brown on the station this morning talking with Howard and Jeremy, and he mentioned how after this camp is over, you know, in the time in between there, that he hopes that Josh Allen has room at his house for him or something is how he phrased it.
Yeah.
Which you know, I took to mean like that Allen will be hosting some guys and they'll do some work on their own, which a lot of quarterbacks in the league do.
Does he have a big yard?
Maybe.
Would that just be outside?
I would imagine.
I don't know where Allen lives.
Yeah,
probably has. He probably could afford a house with a big yard.
Probably. Or have access to a high school or something in his hometown,
yeah.
even if he's not here. I don't know.
Be funny to like just drive around your neighborhood and they're all working out in the yard.
A bunch of Bills.
The Bills.
They're working out. So there's that anyway. Like,
I asked Mitch Morse if his... Today I asked Mitch Morse if anything changes with his offseason plan because now he kind of, you know, he has missed all this time. He's obviously got to get back into more football shape before training camp. So does that change how he goes about his 6 weeks off when he leaves? And he basically said no. Like, he didn't come out and say no or yes. But what he basically said was that, you know, everybody knows that when you get to training camp, it's got to be – no one's going to be 100 tip-top, like, ready to run at training camp and put a full day without getting tired. And there's going to be an adjustment for everybody, so he understands that. So he's obviously got to put a little work in. He's going to put a lot of work in probably this offseason to get ready for training camp. But he said everybody knows once you get to training camp, that's a different deal. No matter what you do in the offseason, you know, you get to training camp and things get ratcheted up and you need to be ready to rock and roll. And it's going to take you a couple days to do that.
So, look, amongst the receiver group, I mean, there's a lot of names there. Obviously, all teams are carrying a lot of guys. We got maybe some idea which guys are completely safe. And then there's just the guys that are down the depth chart somewhat and somewhat of a curiosity. I guess like rookie free agent David Sills would be someone you'd want to include in this. And then there's Duke Williams. And, like, he's someone that is easy to forget about, I guess, because they signed him so long ago. But a real curiosity, like a standout college player that got on the wrong side of some stuff, ended up in the CFL, so he's got pro experience. Have you had, through all of these cycles here, the times you've been able to watch, but especially these ones where you could watch the whole practice, is there anything about Duke Williams that's worth telling our audience about?
Today was the... I saw him make a really nice catch today during one of the team 11-on-11. It was with Matt Barkley at quarterback. He was kind of running from one side of the formation across the middle to the other. He caught it. Really nice outstretched catch before he went out of bounds. That's kind of the first time he's flashed it all to me. Now, that's not to say that he's been a disappointment. He's just not getting opportunity. So, therefore, I would say that, you know, he's got a lot of work to do. He's buried on the depth chart to me right now. But I would say of all the positions on the team, Bulldog, the thing I've noticed for the three OTAs, minicamps, whatever now that Sean McDermott has run, and even going into training camp for the first two he's been here, that is a position, wide receiver, that there is just a whole lot of shuffling. And guys just, you can't really gauge who's where, and everybody moves up and down the depth chart. I think about where Robert Foster was this time of year last year,
right,
and then where he obviously wound up. And then he gets waived, then he comes back, and things like that. And there's so many guys. Then there's all these injuries on top of it. So I would say Duke Williams and David Sills, I've made a point to kind of watch their reps, and they don't get many reps. Now, today, because of injuries, they were out there a little bit more. They weren't with the first team generally, but they were out there a little bit more. And I would say David Sills started to get his reps a little amped up more than Duke Williams would. But I'm not going to read anything into it because every year this happens to me. Every year I think to myself, ooh, this guy's getting good reps or not as good reps, and then we get to training camp and everything changes at wide receiver because it's just for some reason that's just a position they just put everybody in a jar and shuffle it up as much as possible.
It's tough for those guys. They lose on ties if they go through the whole preseason, and even if they produce in the preseason, they're going to lose on ties. The Bills have invested in two guys in free agency that it would look ridiculous if they weren't on the team somehow, unless it was an injury. You've got Foster, who emerged last year. Like, what do they think of that? What's that worth? and Zay Jones, who was a second-round pick going into year three, off a big bump in production, and the targets were really there and touchdowns. So one of those guys, maybe, right, Sal? Like, it's just hard because there's just so little invested in them. What would they have to do to actually beat any of those guys out? I think there's almost no chance of that, and then it's just fitting in underneath that,
right,
if there's any room.
Two spots, maybe, yeah, right.
Yeah, and you have to count, you know, the guys who are really getting the beneficiary of some of these injuries, I think more than anyone, has been Ray McLeod and Andre Roberts. Andre Roberts is on the field all the time, it seems like. And when he was signed, you know, he's mainly been a return man, but he has played receiver in this league, and he's put up some decent numbers early in his career. And he said, when he was signed at his press conference, he said, I want to continue to play wide receiver. I know I can play wide receiver, and I'm going to push for a job. And I'll tell you, with the injuries they've had, whether it be, you know, Zay Jones being out or Robert Foster today, and both of them, he's been on the field a lot this entire offseason. And then Ray McLeod is someone, you know, I've mentioned him to you the last couple of weeks. He's still getting a lot of work. And even today, he was on the field a lot. Isaiah McKenzie is as well. And they seem to be both in there a lot. But I've noticed Ray a lot. And I think he's going to be pushing for that another slot job. You know, if they're going to keep somebody behind Cole Beasley in the slot strictly for that guy, I think Ray has a shot there. And also, obviously, he can be a return man.
And all three of those guys also outrank the other two guys. Williams and Sills. They've all played in the league.
Correct.
McKenzie, you know, this is how I operate. McKenzie started for me in the fantasy playoffs in that Detroit game last year. It was going great until he got hurt, but I lost. I want to talk about Dawson Knox, but maybe that will be tomorrow because we're almost out of time for today. I'd like to know what you thought of how the Durant thing unfolded and how the fans, you know, reacted like they did and what's been said about that.
Yeah, I think that the immediate reaction to anybody when a star is out is, as any fan would be, wow, we get to play that team without the guy, right? No matter what setting you're in. You know, obviously, if we find out today that the Bills are going to, if Tom Brady is not going to be available to them, yeah, wow, that could be two wins for the team. Who knows? But here's the thing. I don't think, not necessarily with you guys, or I've heard a lot of talk about this. I think there has to be some nuance involved here of the difference between being happy that a player is not playing against you because you have opportunity to win versus literally being in the moment and seeing a player on the ground and cheering for that injury. And I've never understood how anybody could do that in any sport at any level. If these are athletes, they're competing at the highest of levels. They are human beings, and you know, they go down. That's a tough deal to see something like that. I don't like watching it. I've always hated watching that. I've seen plenty of really bad injuries in my life, both you know, to players on my team, guys I've coached, anything like that, or the opposing team. And in the moment someone goes down, it's immediate to me, oh my God, like, wow, that sucks. But sure, if you're going to tell me the Bills can play games without every other starting quarterback yeah, why wouldn't you take that? Of course you would take that, and you'd be happy the guy wasn't playing. But it's just got to be a little nuance there, and I think it was wrong for anybody to cheer Kevin Durant being on the ground last night. And the minute it happens, as soon as he falls even, I don't get it. I don't get cheering that. Maybe if you thought there was a turnover, but who knows? I don't know what these people were thinking. Yeah, he got turned over. Yeah. And then we say, oh, look at that guy cheering. But when he's on the ground for a little while and he grabs something, the cheering should just stop. That is it. You should not be doing that, and I don't like it.
It's when he gets up and starts to walk, and you see that he's struggling, is when you hear the crowd like go to the next level on that.
Yeah.
So that's what it was about.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the closer you get to players who you've watched pay a price, and you're around pro athletes, and you've coached even at the high school level, I think about knowing what my son has done. Like, even at just the low level he is still at, comparatively speaking, to all of this. It changes your perspective on it for sure, because you know the amount of work that has gone in, and like, you can put yourself very easily in that person's, the injured player's shoes, his friends, his teammates, his family, like everyone who's been around supporting that effort. So for me, like, I don't even think I'm objective about it anymore, largely, but I still forgive a fan in the cauldron of the moment. He's the bad guy. He's not a real person to those fans. He's the bad guy on the other team, and I don't like you, and you're hurt now, and I'm going to take some pleasure in that. I think in the moments after that, And I think that even happened last night. I mean, it took some urging from the Toronto players, but the crowd largely turned around and was applauding Durant towards the end of his exit from the stage. And I think in the heat of the moment, I don't know, I'm not hardcore on you're the worst person ever or something if you're excited about it. I think if you're still excited about it now, like, I'm glad he's hurt, not which is different than I'm glad I don't have to face him. And that maybe right. is tough to separate, but like, I would never be glad someone tore their Achilles like a day later. I'm going to feel bad for the guy.
I think to me it's the difference is what's done is done. Like, if it happens and you're like, hey, he's not going to play, I'm happy my team doesn't have
right,
to face him.
Right.
But in the moment when you see a guy get hurt, you feel you're there, you see it. I mean, to cheer something like that, I don't know. I've never got it. And I'll tell you, I do think there are fans in every city. There's been a lot of talk of, well, we would never do that here.
Oh, totally.
There's fans in every city that would do something like that. 100%. We know that.
Yeah.
And there's also many, many fans in every city that say, no way, man, that's awful. I don't want to see something like that.
Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome.
Sal's Yankees beat the Mets today in the first of a doubleheader. Looked like batting practice a little bit. 12-5. They'll play again tonight because, you know, two gates.
Right. Right. Yeah, they got rained out yesterday, right?
Yep.
Sales appearance there, by the way, once again, sponsored by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
I want to talk about Kevin Durant, or maybe better for us, the reaction, your reaction to seeing fans react to his being hurt like that. Have you done it? I asked myself that. I thought about the Umberger play, and I was so amped up for that. Everybody's cheering the hit, and that's the excuse we make. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be an excuse, but that's like the way we would describe it is like you're cheering for the hit. But really, what's within that? The possibility of an injury is part of why the hit is valuable, you know, in a hockey game or a football game. And maybe in those sports, maybe there's more room for it. Mm-hmm. Like Sal's talking about reacting that way. Like I said, too, when you're right down there, the people who are right down there by Durant, I mean, that's a weird one because they're going to hear it. He's going to hear you and see you maybe. And like that, I think is really embarrassing. 803-0550 to discuss it with us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back with the update next here on WGR.
I want to win. I want to play on a competitive team. And with the players we have, I think that that's a realistic thing to think. And then you sort of go down the list on sort of living situation, how your family's going to be affected, and all those things. I think they line up positively, sort of how you're going to fit in with the community, how you fit in the locker room, which for me, fortunately, I had a year to sort of try it out. I think everything was positive, and that's why we sort of ended up where we did.
Jeff Skinner took questions today down at the arena. Two or three of them, maybe, were aired on the station. The whole thing is at WGR550.com. You can listen to Skinner today. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Sneaky Joe, 9-0 USA. This woman, Megan Rapinoe, how do you say it? Who just scored?
Sounds good.
Rapinoe.
Very excited for the 9-0 goal.
Yeah.
In this world, we're probably going to have to criticize that.
Right, you calm down a little bit.
Just like
ratchet guys, it down a little bit. You made it 9-0.
9-0 in a soccer game.
But remember, goal differential in the World Cup is a thing. It's a tiebreaker. So all these goals are important.
Within the group?
Yeah.
If they don't win the group after winning a game 9-0.
Maybe another team could win 9-0. You got to win by 15, 16. Now 10, it's run 10, it up. 10. 10.
Now it's 10.
Oh my God.
I saw a Thailand when it was like 4-0. Somebody, I'm sorry, I don't know their players by name. Somebody had the ball like around the center circle and just launched one to the net. And I wondered about that. Like, is this shooting to score? Like, when you're just way behind in a soccer game like this, what is that move? That is like your first day playing FIFA.
Yeah, we just try this from here.
You just don't know.
Or you really... You
just don't know the buttons.
Right, you mishandle and you shoot from there.
Yeah,
right.
So you just... you know that one? So you just shoot from like midfield because you've pushed the B button by mistake? Oh, whoops.
Yep.
They look like maybe they just learned where the B button is.
Yeah.
Thailand. I'm just all talking tough here as an American. 10-0. I'm just all like, you know, got my chest out. I'm all proud and everything. Boastful,
save some for later. everybody. Morgan has 4 goals. Just saw that. Something say that's pretty good. It's a pretty good day.
Yep. You know, the Bills are having this mini camp here, and when that's over, they're gone until late July. How long is mini camp? It's just this week?
Just 3 days here, yeah. Today, okay, tomorrow, so, Thursday, I think. I don't think there's a day off in there. I think they just go the 3 days, and then it's over.
And then that's it. So they have six weeks off. And, of course, like every summer, we'll talk about them a lot. But, you know, there is space to talk about other things, and, of course, we'll use it. But with the Bills, so they're predicted to be at the betting lines, a 7-win team, right? So that's a good place to start for me every time is what are they expected to be in this objective way? And that is 7-9, maybe a tick higher because it costs more to bet the over. So 7+ is kind of their win total if you look at it that way. And so I think the most interesting number of wins to talk about with them is 8. Because any higher than 8 and people will be impressed. People will be pleased. You know, if this is a 9-win team or better, of course better, I don't think there'll be much to bang on them for. You know, you don't know how the season will flow. Like maybe it'll be a team that has a chance to make it and they collapse and then we'll be mad. But
yeah,
most 9 or better win seasons, especially for a franchise that has not made the playoffs very often, are, you know, not bad. And 7 is the number, and lower is definitely bad.
Right.
6 is what you had last year. Lower than 7 will make you wonder what we'll be talking about what they're doing and whether it's right. That's, you know, out there too. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there's a lot of room in between.
Right.
But there is.
There's 8.
8 is there in between.
8 is there in between. Yeah. I think the only way 8. I don't think 8 gets anybody fired. But with that said, the only way 8 is like a palatable, positive vibe heading into January and the winter and the offseason is if Allen provably, definitively shows progress and you feel like that's going in the right direction. You're not all the way home yet because, you know, well, you still didn't win that many games, but he progressed. He was, what, more accurate? He found a way to use Cole Beasley. The offense looked more well-rounded. Whatever. All these things that Allen would get a lot of credit for and maybe their coaching staff too. But somehow you only win 8 games because what? You know, the defense isn't quite as strong or there's a mistake here or there that costs you and it's football. And, like, that happens. Like that kind of 8-win season, I think you go, okay, I'll take it. I wanted better, but fine. The most important thing is that guy's getting better. Here's the evidence, and we feel decent about that moving into 2020. If he's a flatline, like even playing more football, but like you just stretch out his stats and he throws for, you know, under 200 yards a game like he did last year, and the touchdowns aren't there, and it's just not progress, then I think there's trouble. Okay, because if that's the kind of year you have, this is gonna feel like it's on the rails. It's gonna feel like you're heading towards a cliff. If he doesn't progress. So progress from him, but still only 8 wins. Okay. Any other way, and I think I'm in pretty tough.
Well, I wanted to look at other quarterbacks who are a little older and see, well, what is on the line for them at the stage Allen is at. And it's interesting because, like, there were 3 quarterbacks picked in the first round the year before Allen was picked in the first round. So we're talking about the 2017 draft. And they've all been to the playoffs already. They've all had home playoff games already. Trubisky, Mahomes, and Watson.
Right.
Like, they've all hosted playoff games already. They've been in the league for 2 years each. And Mahomes didn't play in one of them.
Right.
They've all hosted playoff games already. 16 is Goff and Wentz at the top of the draft. Wentz, say what you will, has a Super Bowl ring.
Right, they hosted playoff games in his second year. He didn't play them.
He didn't play in them, but he is the reason, a big reason why they did.
Right.
And so has Goff. Right. They have both played in Super Bowls. Holy cow. Like, what is going to be good and what needs to happen?
That's a tough bar to clear, I think.
You know, and what if Mayfield at the top of the 18 draft, as is kind of predicted with the Browns, has an excellent year? Like, that's an excellent team.
Yeah.
If that happens, then that's even a little bit more pressure. Uh-huh. So you have these other guys, Allen, Darnold, and Jackson. Jackson's a little different because he's late in the draft. Rosen is different because he's already on his second team. Bills and Jets, those two guys, it's going to need to look like progress.
Mm-hmm.
Or else there'll be at least conversation about it. And maybe the Bills or maybe the Jets will both be like, no, we're just going to, we got to be patient and talk like that. And there is an argument for that.
Right.
But there's probably not room for both of those teams to show progress. I mean, in terms of wins.
Right.
Would they both be able to do it without it coming at New England's expense?
Like some, yeah. It's hard to fathom that. I think sitting here right now. So it could be challenging to get past. You know, get to a bigger, not double digit wins, 10, might be tough for this year. I think if you have that flatline kind of year, they'll say he's our guy. We're fine. But I think the heat will be on immediately. Like, you know, I know maybe some people hate when we do this, but it's just I think it's a way to look at it. Like, what's the timeline? If you have that season this year and Allen is just sort of, it's like last year. There's some really good plays and we like his charisma and whatever, but there's not a lot of touchdowns, there's not a lot of yards, then I think you'll still talk about how he's your guy going into 2020, but the heat will be on everybody. And if the year starts, it's a little like EJ. If the year starts, even though that was only the 1 year, by the second year, four games in, plug was pulled, and people were trying to save jobs, and Marone actually really kind of did that and then left of his own accord anyway. But I think that's where you end up in 2020. If this coming year isn't progress, I predict everyone is still in the same seats when the next season comes, but they're on borrowed time at that point. It starts to get, did you get this right or not? And how long are you going to go here if this doesn't start showing signs of progress in another season, and then everybody's head is on the block then.
16 also has Paxton Lynch, who is, is he even out of the league maybe? Where's Paxton Lynch? He's out of Denver, I think.
I am not sure where he landed.
I don't know where he is, but like he's a guy in the conversation too. And I like obviously Denver has moved on. They've drafted another rookie. This is a first round pick from three drafts ago. They've drafted another rookie in Drew Lock. They signed Joe Flacco. They had signed Case Keenum before. Like, they never really gave this guy any real shot at it. And then you have to go back to 2015 to find a player who really might be on the line like that for, because the other guys, you know, they're not perfect. Like, Trubisky isn't just all set for life or mm-hmm. anything, but he did win games. It's Winston. Winston at the top of the 2015 draft is at that maybe crossroads point. New coach for him now. Mariota would be too. Mariota also has a playoff appearance and a playoff win on the road in Kansas City. So it moves fast for these guys. That's why, this is part of why it was so important to me last year that Allen play. And I feel lucky that he did, because I don't know how long it would have taken them to mm-hmm. take Nathan Peterman out if it wasn't as disastrous as it was. But they did do it. It wasn't an injury. They did go to Allen to start the second game. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is WGR.
No, I've thrown significantly, sort of off my feet to make sure I don't aggravate something, but keep my arm in shape, certainly, and there's a bunch to do there. Yeah, a football, a pigskin Wilson Duke, yes. With Roger Goodell's signature on it.
Andrew Luck, I just remembered a question I got on Twitter today and I was just typing it while we were listening to Andrew Luck. Do giraffes eat fish?
No.
When would they eat fish? Like, they don't go out to, Red Lobster or something.
No.
Giraffes.
They do drink out of streams.
Okay.
Or
there'd be fish in there.
Yeah, but no, I think they're strictly green. There's no pond or lake available at the zoo. They're eating green. They're eating leaves.
Giraffes are herbivores.
Yeah.
Eating only plants, leaves, and twigs. I was walking today and took a picture of a tree, I think, sticking out of the Niagara River. And it just looked like, when I glanced at it, it looked like a giraffe, like a hippo would, lunging out of the water. But it looked like a giraffe. And so I just asked listeners, or followers rather, do you think this is actually a tree or maybe a giraffe? And our former producer, Dale, responded with, do giraffes eat fish? As if to really ask me that.
Like, no, they don't. Yeah.
I never really thought it was a giraffe. I guess I don't want to confess that, but maybe I should.
I'm pretty sure you would have known.
It wasn't moving.
Right, that's a sign.
I looked at it to take the picture.
Also, it's the Niagara River.
Also, it's
I mean, I don't know.
Black and white.
I don't live near Bill's Island. To know what kind of I know the specific kind of deer or whatever, but I don't know anything about giraffes being out that way.
I love that
in the wild anyway.
That Bill's Island still does echo in the community. Mm-hmm. It is something I will hear about once in a while, and I'm very happy to hear about Bill's Island. I'm happy to have people tell me that they think that was an interesting idea or at least funny show. The Bill's Island, but that's right. That's Navy Island in the background of that picture, which, I mean, couldn't that be a stadium? You'd have to build bridges or have boats or something to get fans in and out.
It's a lot to undertake.
Love that idea. I love the idea of Navy Island as Bill's Island.
You could have an underground tunnel.
Underground tunnel.
Yeah. Mm. Or underwater tunnel.
Have our own big dig.
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
All right. I mean, let's do it. Let's do it right.
Right.
And we did talk about that one day, and a guy called up with information about deer with like two heads, or what was it again?
I don't know. It was just a specific species of deer that it needs to be protected on the island or something.
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, there's an open there somewhere.
You build a stadium downtown, you're going to move people, right? You can't move deer?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Deer will get like, you know, certain people would rather the deer are more important.
Sure. They're probably more adaptable. You just plop them down somewhere else where there's what they need and like you're good to go.
Right. How about Orchard Park? If you don't have to use the stadium anymore, you might be able to win-win.
Turn the whole thing into a deer sanctuary.
That's right. Maybe there's turn it into an island. I don't know. This is getting stupid.
The unique species or subspecies of deer.
There it is. Yeah.
Yes, that's just sitting there apparently in the computer.
Bill's Island.
803-0550. Do you think you've ever cheered an injury? I'll tell you what I think is the closest I've ever come. Lines open. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.